my two distinguished colleagues, Judges Wiener and Ramirez. Our first case this afternoon is Nicholas Trabuco versus Andres Rivera. Mr. Fletcher, I believe it is. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant's ready.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Fletcher's.
May it please the court.
Mr. Allen.
My name is Brandon Fletches, and I represent Nicholas Trabuco, who is the plaintiff appellant in this matter. This matter arises out of an allegation of a use of excessive force that was brought under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983. Specifically, this matter arises out of an investigatory stop or investigatory approach by an officer on a vehicle who at that point had, according to the officer, pulled into a gas station parking lot too fast. From the time the officer approached the vehicle, within 1 minute of arriving at the driver's side door, Mr. Trabuco, who was the driver of that vehicle, had been tackled and tased by Deputy Andres Rivera, who was the officer who approached that vehicle. Those uses of force constituted abrupt resorts to overwhelming force in the face of what was at most only passive resistance. That makes those uses of force objectively unreasonable in light of two clearly established cases which preceded the events of this matter. One is Hanks versus Rogers. In Hanks versus Rogers, officers stopped a vehicle where a driver was driving 20 miles per hour below the speed limit. Throughout the encounter with the officer, even after he was out of the vehicle, the driver of that vehicle continually questioned the officer's verbal orders, continually told the officer he had not done anything. The officer...
You were a trial counsel in this matter as well, is that correct?
On Hanks versus Rogers?
No, in the trial case for Trabuco versus Rivera.
Yes, I was.
That was the Hanks versus Roger issue preserved? Because it looks like during the jury charge conference, after there was some discussion about the cases that would be included, or the language that be included, it says here that you said, having taken out the parenthetical language and the Mullinex quotes, the plaintiff has no other objections.
The reason that was taken out, and if you look at the entirety of the jury instruction conference, you'll see one point where the judge, the trial judge, Judge Mills, said that our proposed jury instructions would be made part of the record, which they were, and that our proposed jury instruction should preserve our record for what we argued should be included in the jury instructions given by the court.
So it is your contention that it was preserved?
It is our position that it's preserved, yes, Your Honor. And I will say, as the counsel who was present in that room, that was my understanding, is that we were preserving our record by having those proposed jury instructions added to the record. So back to the recounting of the facts of Hanks versus Rogers. Continually, the suspect in that case questioned the officer's orders, asked why he was being asked to do certain things like approach the back of the car, put his hands behind his head, and continually told the officer that he had not done anything wrong. The officer repeated orders over the course of 15 to 20 seconds before the plaintiff in that case took a small lateral step. And in response to that step, and almost simultaneously therewith, the officer performed a half spear and rammed him into the car that he was standing at the back of over the trunk. The court ruled that that was an abrupt resort to the use of overwhelming force, where the plaintiff in that case had used only passive resistance at most, and that it constituted clearly excessive force under clearly established law. The other case is Trammell versus Frouge. Yes.
To the other case, I'd like to talk about some distinctions between this case and Hanks v. Rogers. Wasn't one of the facts that distinguishes that case and Hanks is that the plaintiff was blindsided by an abrupt, unwarned blow, whereas in this case, your client was looking at the officer holding the taser.
Well, it's two different issues, Your Honor. One, in this case, my client was not looking at the officer holding the taser when he was tased. My client was on his knees with his back to the officer with his hands up when he was tased in the back. That's how the tasing went down. In response to having the taser pointed at him, he dropped to his knees and raised his hands to surrender. As far as the tackling of Mr. Trabucco in this case goes, it was an abrupt use of force because without giving verbal order, Deputy Rivera grabbed Mr. Trabucco's arm after asking him to exit the vehicle. And Mr. Trabucco turned and did pull his arm away from Officer Rivera, which this court has ruled as passive resistance at most, pulling it away from an officer's grasp, and was immediately tackled to the ground.
But in Hanks, didn't the court find that Mr. Hanks offered no physical resistance, where here there's at least some?
Right. I believe Hanks, in talking about it, said there was passive resistance. You say physical resistance. I believe that statement would be accurate, that in Hanks, I don't recall there being any physical resistance, such as pulling away from an officer's grasp. However, the court has ruled that passive resistance, such as pulling away from an officer's grasp, does not merit an immediate use of physical force.
But that wasn't the only thing that happened here, was it?
What do you mean, Your Honor?
Well, according to the video, the officer goes to the car. There's at least 30 seconds of dialogue between the officer and the driver of the car. Then you see the driver come out and start to go to the back when the officer grabs his arm and he pulls away. And then they go out sort of more into the parking lot. And you can see the officer push him away, and he turns and faces the officer, and then that's when the officer pulls out the taser. Your client is looking at somebody in the store, yelling, waving his hands, and then he gets down on his knees, puts his hands up, but he's still talking and yelling at someone away. So there's more going on here. The jury got to see it. The jury got to hear the officer's testimony about what he perceived. So isn't that a distinction, factually, from Hanks?
At the moment of the tasing, I would say no, because in the Hanks case, in the same way that Mr. Hanks was continually telling the officer, I've done nothing wrong, what he would give a command and Hanks would go, what for? I didn't do anything. There are two videos. One is a video taken from a cell phone from inside the store. Obviously, somebody was interested and took a cell phone video that ended up in our possession. And two, the surveillance video. The surveillance video from the store has no audio. The cell phone video does have audio. What you hear Mr. Trabucco say almost simultaneously with being tased, he was tased 1 second after he went to his knees. Almost simultaneously with being tased, he says, I've done nothing wrong. What Mr. Trabucco was facing was an officer who had given him no verbal orders, no explanation for why he was being investigated, no verbal direction with which he had not complied. It was all physical force from the tackle forward. Mr. Trabucco, when pushed away by Deputy Rivera, did not flee. Deputy Rivera testified at trial. He was never a physical threat. He never thought he was a physical threat. He never made any verbal threats. In fact, on the video, you can see when Deputy Rivera pushes Mr. Trabucco away, Mr. Trabucco shows his hands and he's asking, undisputed, what did I do? What he's wondering why he's being confronted with this force from this officer. So when the officer gives no verbal order but takes out the taser and aims it at Mr. Trabucco, Mr. Trabucco further surrendered. He went to his knees, raised his hands where they could be seen, and he did yell. He yelled, I've done nothing wrong. You can hear that clearly on the cell phone video. What you also miss on the cell phone video, that Officer Rivera says is that he was giving further verbal orders, but you can hear nothing coming from Deputy Rivera. So we dispute that any further verbal orders were given or that any verbal orders were given at all during the encounter. Instead, it was all physical force, which is why we believe that the Trammell and Hanks cases apply to this case, because those cases are all about overwhelming force in the face of little to no resistance, where officers are supposed to use verbal negotiation and de-escalation tactics. This court has recognized that, where if just because someone is not complying with a verbal order, if they are not threatening the officer or others, officers need to take steps that de-escalate that rather than escalating it with physical force. And I believe that that's really the principle that Hanks and Trammell stand for, is because what you have is one level of unjustified force and the reaction to that force, and the defense is attempting to use that to justify further force in the tasing. Your Honor?
Let me interrupt you for a second. Regarding your concern with the jury instructions, what is your best argument that the language from Cloud v. Stone was not substantially covered in the charge as a whole?
That the language from Cloud v. Stone was not substantially covered?
Yes.
Your Honor, the true problem that we argue with the jury instruction was the inclusion of the Salazar v. Molina quote. We believe that's where it's a non-analogous case, and we believe that that's where the...
Well, don't you claim that Cloud v. Stone was not covered?
Your Honor, I don't believe we claim that Cloud v. Stone was not covered. There was a quote from Cloud v. Stone regarding courts finding that tasing is not accepted when there's passive resistance.
I don't hear very well, so maybe move on to what case best supports your argument that the district court erred when it denied your motion for a new trial.
I think what the court needs to look at on the motion for new trial is that the Salazar case is not analogous factually to the Trabuco versus Rivera case, this case, and that case should not have been given to the jury as an instruction, because no court would decide qualified immunity based upon a non-analogous case that's factually. Instead, the courts would distinguish those cases and not apply them. If you look at the facts of Salazar, they are extreme levels of resistance. A high-speed car chase at 2 a.m. in dangerous neighborhoods, suspect doing 70 miles per hour, and only when he was stopped by a roadblock did he exit his vehicle and lay down on his stomach. And those are the facts upon which the tasing of that suspect when the officer approached moments later were justified. That could not be more different than what is encountered here. This encounter between Deputy Rivera and Mr. Trabuco occurred in broad daylight in a gas station parking lot in Hernando, Mississippi, not a dangerous area. There was obviously no exigency. You can see that the officer took at least 30 seconds before even beginning to, and finished fueling his own vehicle before he even began to approach Mr. Trabuco's vehicle. So there was no suspicion of a serious crime such as a high-speed car chase or the case that Salazar relies upon, Escobar, a suspicion of a violent crime. There's just nothing under the facts of this case to justify the level of force that followed even the arguable resistance that Mr. Trabuco put forth. And by the time of the tasing, any other resistance had ceased. He had surrendered. He was on his knees with his hands up. And the only justification given by Deputy Rivera at that point was that he lifted his knee just a little off the ground. One, that strains credibility if you watch the video, because it's literally 1 second. that he's on the ground with his on his knees with his hands up, where the officer can see them before he's tased in the back. But also, you can look back to the Hanks case, and the Hanks case talks about that one lateral step that's not accompanied by any other signs of flight or any other threat, and that using overwhelming force in that circumstance was not, without further verbal negotiation, was not justified. And seeing that my time has expired, I'll yield.
Thank you. Mr. Allen?
Yes, thank you. May I proceed?
Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Allen, and I'm here today on behalf of the original defendant in this case, Officer Andres Rivera. This case, to me, appears nothing more than an attempt to have this court substitute findings for the jury's verdict. This was a hardly fought case. It was a case that was obviously, in these qualified immunity type instances, highly contested. But at the end of the day, the jury determined that Officer Rivera was due to be afforded the protections of immunity, that he was qualified in this case. There is nothing that has been presented by counsel that would indicate that either Judge Mills' JNOV was erroneous, or that any jury instruction that, you know, some tweak to the language or one small adding of some verbiage to a decision could have somehow substantially altered the outcome of this case. To suggest that is simply speculation. So we're here today a year and a half later, and somehow we are to assume that if one small blurb from Salazar had not been included in the jury instructions, that the jury would have rendered a different decision. And of course, in making such an argument, that ignores the fact that there were multiple instructions that we felt were also very much on point, and which a review of the conference in which these were hammered out indicates that the defendants lost those. And I'll point out just a couple of those. One that Judge Mills denied: our precedent does not clearly establish that a takedown maneuver against a drunken, erratic suspect who is resisting arrest is constitutionally unreasonable. And recall that we were dealing with whether he was drunken. He was certainly erratic, but he was under the influence of something.
Where's the record evidence that the officer was of the belief that he was under the influence at the time that he did he call for the DUI testing before or after he did the taser?
The DUI was obviously given after the case, if that's what you're asking.
What record evidence is there that at the time he actually tasered him, or at the time that there was actually a tussle, he thought that there was any issue with regard to intoxication?
Oh, Your Honor, that's clear in the record. Officer Rivera testified multiple times throughout that, again, we agree on one thing. You know, this is an odd situation where, you know, the traffic stop was unconventional from the standpoint that Officer Rivera, as I'm sure this court already knows, was at the gas station filling this patrol car up. And then Mr. Trabuco, he squealed his tires. That caught the officer's attention and comes into a very congested service station, the middle of the day, busy hours, driving erratically. The officer waited, he finished filling his car up, he testified, and the record is very clear on this, multiple instances, that he was simply going to go and, hey,
you know, everything okay? You know, I got pulled over two nights ago. You know, what's going on? You know, why are you going so fast trying to get where you're going? And immediately, the plaintiff, who we believe, I think he testified, was on the phone with his grandmother, he began hollering, "I'm going to jail. I'm getting arrested." He was fidgeting in the car, just as you can see him fidgeting on the video. He bent over in the inside of the car, couldn't see his hands, reached over to the passenger seat. So he was absolutely, and the record is very clear, that he was acting erratically. And of course, we know that he was under the influence of something because he pled guilty to it. He pled guilty to DUI. So at that juncture, he was ordered out of the car. He was ordered to go and just turn around. There's a four-door car to turn around right there at the rear door, and he kept walking. Officer Rivera put his hand on his shoulder to indicate stop, gave a verbal command, and at that juncture, two things happened, very similar to some of the cases we see here. Number one, he spun around, and number two, he knocked the officer's arm off of him. That, in turn, immediately preceded the effort by Officer Rivera to take him to the ground. I think it's very important in this case because what are officers supposed to do? We've got a classic case here of an exemplary use of the use of force continuum. Presence. The officer walked to the car. What's next? Verbal. At that juncture, ordered him out of the car because of his behavior. What's next? Hands. Not a takedown, just hands. Hands on him. His hand gets knocked off. A suspect that he has not yet even been able to search or pat down spins around and is right in his face. And at that point, there's a takedown. And as we all know, the takedown was unsuccessful. The officer could not control the plaintiff in this case. The plaintiff was able to fight him off, at which point the officer got up, and you can see in the video because they kind of reemerged from the rear of the car, pushed him away, and continuing right up the use of force continuum, ultimately used his taser. I don't know if an officer could have done anything more. And again, that's not what we're here about.
How do you respond to your friend on the other side's argument that he was tased after he had surrendered, after he had dropped to his knees?
Oh, sure. I can easily respond to that because just as they did at court, counsel continues to ignore that he didn't fully comply. The command, and Officer Rivera testified to it over and over again, was, he says in the record, get down on your stomach. Get on your stomach. We see a lot of these cases. A lot of these things happen, like the Salazar case. He was tased when he was on his stomach because that's where officers want you. That's when they know when, at least when your legs are spread, your arms are out, they at least know that they are, you know, sort of kind of getting control of the situation. So he never complied. He had only gone halfway down. So if we look at this in the totality, and an officer by himself, by the way, how many officers were present in Salazar, which qualified immunity was granted? Two. Because recall, in Salazar, the first officer is already there on the scene when the second officer comes up, and I believe, if not mistaken, it was the second officer that tased Salazar. In this case, we've got Andres Rivera. The record will show, we kind of, you know, joked about it, he's all of 5'7" and about 130 pounds. Now, Mr. Trabuco, I'm not here to tell you that he's a big guy either. They're relatively similar size. But my point is, this is not the situation of some 6'3" overzealous officer who liked to throw his weight around. He's literally 130 pounds wet. And so, in light of the totality of the circumstances, we've got a guy that he clearly recognizes from his training is under the influence of something, not complying, turns around, puts hands on the officer, hasn't been searched. He attempts to take him to the ground unsuccessfully, gets back up, is ordering him, get on the ground on your stomach. And you can see in the video, it's very clear because Mr. Trabuco had emerged from behind the car. He's erratic is a kind description of his behavior. He's somewhat dancing, high stepping. He kicks a shoe off. There was nothing normal about this guy. And this is the type of case where we're here today with Officer Rivera, you know, standing trial for getting this guy off the road. I mean, this had this not happened, this gentleman was about to get into the car and drive back out in the middle of the day in a very highly populated area. To me, Officer Rivera did a good thing, not a bad thing. But we don't have to judge him from a standard of perfection. We judge him from the standard of a reasonable officer, a reasonable officer. And I think it's a fair statement to say that it would be hard-pressed for any of us to think that another officer put in the same situation, that we couldn't find one, that we could not find another officer who would not have acted the same way. And that's the standard. Would no other officer have taken the steps or the measures that Officer Rivera did? And again, I would submit to this court that no, you'd find a lot of officers who may have done worse. The cases that the defense relied upon, it's odd because actually, I believe it was the Betts case, 22 F 4th 577, as well as the Cloud case. Both of the officers in those cases, which again, qualified immunity was granted to the officers, they actually tased immediately upon that initial confrontation, that hands on the officer, the spinning around in Cloud. The suspect spun around and immediately was in the officer's face. That's when the tasing happened. So if you look at the case law, there's actually an argument to be made that Officer Rivera could have skipped that step in the use of force continuum and gone straight to tasing, and that according to the Fifth Circuit case law, it would have been okay for him to tase. So I will go back to... I will go back to Salazar for a moment. If you listen to plaintiff's counsel, to the appellant, you would be of the opinion that Salazar had just committed a triple murder and was heading on his way to commit another. Yes, he was involved in a high-speed chase. Yes, that is dangerous. That can put lives at risk. But I believe it's the Betts case also, which states, excuse me, it's Tucker, 998 F3rd 165. And in that case, there was a takedown after the individual was loud and flailing his hands. Sounds familiar. I don't believe that Tucker ever put his hands on the officer as Mr. Trabuco did in this case. Nevertheless, my point to make is that the Tucker case held that a DUI, driving under the influence, is a serious offense. So again, we're getting this argument that if only we didn't have Salazar, because no way is Salazar appropriate. I'll point out another way in which the facts of this case are more egregious than Salazar, thus necessitating the act of the takedown and the tasing by Officer Rivera. And that is, In Salazar, we have a high-speed chase. He's caught. He's out. He's on the ground. The other officer comes up. I think there's a testimony that his legs were crossed, and he uncrossed them, and then he was tased. Okay, that's it. So we look in this case. We've got a guy who's already physically resisted. So we have an extra event which occurred between the time of the initial meeting at the car and the time when he was tased. Clearly, you can't look at the facts of this case in a vacuum and go, okay, let's just go right to when he was tased and let's start our analysis there. That's not how it works. And so it would be tantamount to Salazar pulling Mr. Salazar over, having a physical confrontation with him, a literal wrestling match on the ground, and then the tasing takes place. And you don't have that in Salazar. And yet the officers were granted qualified immunity. In our case, we have the initial meeting at the door of the car. We have Mr. Trabuco knock the officer's hand off. They go to the back. He's in his face. He's taken to the ground. Officer Rivera, unfortunately, could not control him. And then, only after that, is he tased. And there was never a surrender. There was never a compliance with the order. The record is filled with, just as his statement was, that he filled out contemporaneous to this incident by Officer Rivera, multiple times I yelled out, "On your stomach, on your stomach." He did not comply. He began to go down, and so here's the question we're asking. So at that juncture, when you've had what happened at the car, you've had what happened when he knocked his arm off, you've had a physical confrontation on the ground, still he hasn't been searched. He's only halfway down, and then right or wrong, we don't know whether he would have gotten up because he wasn't given the chance, but you can see that his knee does come up. It is consistent. And if you want to call him having a trigger finger, that's a trigger finger that only existed in the context of everything that had happened in the last 30 seconds.
Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir.
Let me interrupt you.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you're going to get to this, but what case best supports your argument that the district court did not err when it denied Trabuco's motion for a new trial?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, I believe I would, I don't know if you're only looking for one, but I would say that the Solis v. Surrett case, 31 F 4th 975, the Tucker case, 998 F 3rd 165, and then if you want to put Salazar in there, you can, but I don't know if you need to get to Salazar. If Salazar doesn't exist, I don't know if there's any different decision in this case. So in the Solis case, you had, I believe, and I guess these facts are emphasized not by me, I'm just regurgitating what's in the opinion, but I believe you had a woman who maybe had been out on the night and she was apparently highly intoxicated. They indicated she's wearing a dress and she's wearing heels, and I guess it's all the, you know, the things that, look, admittedly, you don't assume she's about to, you know, pull a gun out and shoot the officer, okay, which are certainly situations they face all the time. But nevertheless, she did not comply, and she was taken down to the ground. In the Tucker case, again, as I referenced a moment ago, you again have a takedown with someone who was loud, he was flailing his hands around. There was no contact, no physical contact prior to those two things that happened, the takedown in Solis and Tucker, and yet the officers in that case, or in those cases, were granted qualified immunity. And I would also say, because I know we cited them in our brief to the court, is that going back to the fact that, you know, under what's good for the goose is good for the gander, yes, there were instructions, I guess the Hanks case, which to me is not in any way it's not nearly as analogous as the cases that Judge Mills did allow in. And of course, that was not put into the final jury instruction. But again, neither were these three cases. I don't think I finished that point, and I'd like to do so subject to any questions. So our precedent does not clearly establish that a takedown maneuver against a drunken erratic suspect who is resisting arrest is constitutionally unreasonable. Griggs v. Brewer, 841 F3rd 308, not allowed. Where a suspect resists arrest or fails to follow police orders, officers do not violate his right against excessive force by deploying their tasers to subdue him. Cloud v. Stone, 993 F3rd 379. And then finally, also from Cloud, a tasing was justified when an arrestee used profanity, moved around and paced in agitation. Now, I'm not saying there was any cussing. I don't know if that matters. But certainly there was a lot of, according to the video, moving around and pacing in agitation, and repeatedly yelled at an officer while refusing a series of verbal commands. That's the Cloud v. Stone case. I thought that that blurb literally described the exact moments and seconds prior to our officer tasing him. And again, despite the fact that in that case, I don't believe that that tasing followed a scuffle on the ground, which to me heightens the matter. Officer Rivera already knew, look, I just wrestled this guy. And I'm sure it hurt his pride. I lost. I couldn't hold him down. And whether it was just that Mr. Trabuco is really strong or whether he was hopped up on something, because that's very common, I don't know. But that's going through the officer's mind. And that instruction, that blurb, if we're going to argue that, you know, that would have made some huge difference, well, we didn't get that instruction. And that appears to be right on point, except for the fact, again, to emphasize, our case is more egregious by way of what happened prior to pulling the taser trigger, because we had been on the ground and could not contain Mr. Trabuco. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Please, the court. I first want to address the hopped up on something or pleaded guilty to a DUI. There's the evidence in the record. Mr. Trabuco built cabinets for a living. He had just left Quality Cabinets, where he was building cabinets. He was literally going to the hospital to visit his grandmother, who was in the hospital. He was on the phone on Bluetooth in his car with his grandmother, asking her if she needed anything before he came to the hospital, and was stopping to get a drink at the gas station. The grandmother testified at trial. All of that was accurate. She could hear what was going on. He did not plead guilty to a DUI. The DUI ended up being dismissed. He did enter into a non-adjudication agreement whereby all of the charges that they piled on top of him were dismissed, all the way down to no seatbelt, when Officer Rivera admitted at trial, yeah, that was a bad charge. I couldn't actually see whether he was wearing a seatbelt or not. When there's an allegation of excessive force, it's not uncommon for charges to be piled on somebody. That's what happened here. His criminal defense attorney obviously saw fit to have him enter a non-adjudication agreement whereby everything ended up being dismissed. He was not hopped up on anything. And the testimony from Deputy Rivera was that later, after everything, he suspected he might be under the influence of some narcotic or medication, was the way he phrased it. And so he had a DUI officer do a test, and they ended up charging him with DUI. And he entered the non-adjudication agreement. Opposing counsel took great pains to go through the use of force continuum, but skipped over the verbal order, which is pretty important under our case law in the Fifth Circuit. That going there's something between officer presence and going hands-on with physical force with someone, that is verbal orders. This is why Deputy Rivera testified. He just kept asking me, "What did I do? What did I do? What did I do?" Well, in that case, tell him what he did. Explain to him that you're placing him under arrest and what for. Those are de-escalation techniques. Our expert testified to that. The chief of police, former chief of police of Ocean Springs, Mark Dunstan, testified for us as an expert. These are common de-escalation techniques. Just explaining to somebody. Otherwise, what Mr. Trabuco was facing was an officer who immediately used physical force with him with no explanation and no verbal order. In other words, there was nothing that he had not complied with. The order was to get out of the car, and he did. 3 seconds later, he was on the ground tackled with no explanation. Deputy Rivera testified, "I didn't give him verbal orders while we were on the ground to like put his hands behind his back or anything like that." So he did pull against Deputy Rivera when he had him in a shoulder chokehold. A shoulder lock chokehold, the way he described it, with an arm around his neck and one under his shoulder. He pulled against him, and Deputy Rivera ended up pushing him away, but Deputy Rivera admitted no verbal orders were given during that encounter, and that he did not, Mr. Trabuco did not strike him, didn't punch him, didn't kick him, didn't verbally threaten during that entire encounter. He just pulled against him, and then he pushed him away, and he didn't flee. He stood there and continued to ask, what did I do? In other words, why are you doing this to me? Tell me what I did. And with no further verbal order, pulls his taser, aims it at him, and he does what any reasonable person would do. He goes to his knees with his hands up, surrendering, showing him a sign that he's surrendering. If there was an order, let's just say for the sake of argument, the order was to go to your stomach. And 1 second after hitting your knees, you're tased. That is still not justifiable force. He is in the process of surrendering. And in our cases, in the line of Hanks and Trammell, require that officers continue verbal negotiations in the face of passive resistance or no resistance at all in order to gain compliance instead of immediately resorting to the use of overwhelming force. As far as the struggle and the scuffle, that is in the middle of two uses of force. That did not precede the tackling. It was a result of the unjustified tackling. So then there was the struggle, and then he again surrendered with his on his knees with his hands up and was tased as a thank you for it. If we look at the case of Bagley versus Guillen, and I'll just close with this, that shows that even if there was prior resistance, if the resistance has ceased, the force has to cease, and it didn't here, and it was unjustifiable. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Your arguments have been submitted.